today, Paul Manafort, President Trump's former campaign chair, is in court facing federal tax evasion and bank fraud charges centered on his lobbying work for the Ukrainian government, work that prosecutors say earned Manafort $60 million, which he hid in offshore accounts. In 2014, popular protests toppled his client, the Putin-backed President Viktor Yanukovych. And you'll remember Putin responded by annexing Crimea away from Ukraine and providing military support for pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine on the Russian border fighting to break away. Let's catch up with Yuval Weber, a global fellow at the Wilson Center and associate professor at Daniel Morgan Graduate School. Yuval, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
So first, let's just remind ourselves of the context here. It's the eastern part of Ukraine that's said to be supporting Russia and wanting to break away, the middle and the west wanting to be closer to Europe. Is that an accurate depiction?
Sure, to an extent. What we can say is perhaps about the eastern third of the country is Russian-speaking and, let's say, ethnically Russian. But the part that's actually controlled by pro-Russia separatists, supported by Russian troops, is only a smaller portion of that. So perhaps only maybe 5 to 10% of the country is not under, let's say, Ukrainian central government control.
Well, and the Washington Post is reporting that, in fact, it's not accurate to look at it as a divided society, because polls show most people, even in the areas where the separatists are fighting, want to keep the country together, that this has actually unified the country.
Sure. The opinion polling has been pretty consistent over the last couple of years. And what this shows is that for Ukrainian people, they would rather have these areas back under Ukrainian control. Because let's say about 4 years ago when this war started, obviously there was a lot of fear about what might happen in Kiev. There was allegations that, you know, from the Russian side or from the Russian information side, that this was going to be fascism in Kiev. This is going to be fascism in Ukraine. And all the worst case predictions didn't come to be. So over time, the opinion has shifted back towards trying to find some enthusiasm for the peace initiatives from Minsk II or something that could replace Minsk II.
And what's the sense here? Because it seems pretty clear that Putin and Russia are backing the separatists in the eastern part of the country. If Putin wanted to, would they be faring better? Or is there a sense that he's losing?
Russia could certainly increase military support to the separatists or just send the army over the border. They don't want to do that because that would put their attempts to cozy back up to European countries to get the sanctions lifted. It would destroy that. Simultaneously, if Russia just, let's say, conceded and gave everything back to Ukraine, then that would show that Russia failed in its attempt to shape the internal politics of Ukraine. Then when you look at the other side from the Ukrainian perspective, they don't want to obviously lose the war and give up part of their territory because no country wants to do that. But they also can't win the war in terms of actual military force without getting, let's say, support from NATO or from the United States directly, which, given political realities, no one is going to fight for Ukraine, which is not part of NATO, against Russia.
Yeah.
So in a sense, we have a war in which neither side wants to lose, but neither side really wants to win.
Well, after the summit between Trump and Putin, there was news that the two leaders had talked about a referendum, a vote in eastern Ukraine as to whether or not those people wanted to separate and be part of Russia. The U.S. has dismissed that as policy. Is there any sense that there might be some sort of vote from the people?
No, Ukraine won't hold a referendum because they didn't view the 2014 referendum in Crimea. That was a mechanism in order to take Crimea from Ukraine, make it an independent country for a day, and then as an independent country, then apply to join the Russian Federation.
They don't trust a Putin-backed vote.
Absolutely not, right? Because it would be held in wartime conditions.
Look, Yuval, we're talking on a day where the Manafort trial begins. He, of course, was the lobbyist for the then Putin-backed president. Are people following this in Ukraine? Do they have a sense of their connection to all the tumult in the United States?
So sure, the Manafort trial is of particular interest because, in a sense, people know that that Ukrainian politics at the highest levels was deeply, deeply corrupt. And people recall that that ethnic tensions were stoked during this time and that Manafort was part of it. So in a sense, what this trial for Ukrainians is meant to do is basically to give the, not the exactly seal of approval, but if something is mentioned in a U.S. court of law, that carries a lot of weight. So all the things that people sort of know basically in the ether, once it comes from like a U.S. Federal prosecutor, it's going to have a lot of weight, and that'll help shape Ukrainian politics to some degree.
Well, a lot of their country's money went out of the country through, or allegedly went out of the country through Paul Manafort.
Sure. It's $60 million is a lot of money to a lot of people. One other thing that will come out during this trial is basically how is money and power and politics all conducted at the highest levels in Ukraine and between Ukraine and Russia that Mr. Manafort was clearly playing some role in.
Yuval Weber, Global Fellow at the Wilson Center, Associate Professor at Daniel Morgan Graduate School. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.